Next case for argument, Greenewalt versus Indiana Department of Corrections, Mr. Betts.
Excuse me.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Kevin Betts, and I'm here representing the plaintiff, Ms. Kristen Greenewalt. In a straightforward way, this is a novel case seeking...
Well, if it's novel, I mean, that's kind of the end of it, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, at this point, based on the history, the entire history of psychological exams, there is no case law giving any assurance to the state of Indiana or any state that it may require employees with
that. You can only overcome their qualified immunity if the law was clearly established when they acted. And yet you treat it properly as a completely open issue rather than anything clearly established. Giving a person a psychological test as a search is a real novelty.
Your Honor, it is a novel issue.
If it's novel, how can it have been clearly established?
Well, my strong belief is, Your Honor, that that's a tautological argument, and if you continue down that path...
I don't understand what you mean by tautological.
Circular argument, that if you continue down that path, then putting employees... There is no case law that says you can't take employees to a hitching post and put them in the public square.
The idea is that the law changes not with damages suits against officials, but with injunctive actions, and then eventually the law is clearly established, and then you can bring a damages suit.
And indeed, Your Honor, that is sought in this lawsuit, injunctive relief in this lawsuit.
But you didn't follow the ex parte Young route. You know, you have to sue the individual defendant officials. You can't sue the state agency.
We did indeed, Your Honor. We sued the individual, Mr. Croman, who was the official of the state of Indiana who required this search without basis, without absolutely any factual or policy basis based on the ruling of the trial court. And even the district court said that there could be a logical development of facts which would show a Fourth Amendment implication
Maybe I misunderstood this. So you're seeking both injunctive relief against the officials in their individual capacity and damages?
Yes, Your Honor.
There's no qualified immunity issue with regard to the injunctive relief? Is that what you're saying?
No. The district court ruled that the entire claim was dismissed based on a judgment on the pleadings because summary judgment was never sought by the state of Indiana. And so the district court on its own ruled on a judgment on the pleading, which obviously gives very favorable facts to the plaintiff as pled, and ruled that there is immunity. Our position all along has been that because of the development of case law in this circuit as well as U.S. Supreme Court based on the Fourth Amendment.
No, I'm asking a different question. I mean, the immunity is immunity for damages, and it's not immunity for an injunction under ex parte Young. So my question is, are you separately seeking injunctive relief, or is it just damages that you're interested in, and in which event there wouldn't be an immunity issue, would there?
The district court only ruled on the complaint as pled, which also pled both, Your Honor, a damages complaint and a injunctive relief complaint. And the district court ruled on both bases in dismissing the complaint on a judgment on a pleading on its own.
The court said he was dismissing the suit against IDOC because state agency is not a person. That's fine. And dismissing the claims against the individual because they have qualified immunity. But where did he discuss where did he discuss your effort, if there is an effort by you, to obtain injunctive relief against the defendants as individuals?
He did not, Your Honor. But there
is. Are you pressing that?
We very well may, but we wanted to pursue both out of judicial efficiency, and we have pled for injunctive relief as well as for damages, Your Honor.
Well, is that part of the case still alive in the district court? Or didn't the district court dismiss the whole case?
I think the district court believes it
dismissed
the entire case.
Did the district court dismiss the entire case?
Yes, it did, Your Honor. That's my belief as I stand here right now. Although it did not address the injunctive relief that was sought.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Betts. Mr. Fisher?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My understanding of the nature of this lawsuit is that it names Croman and also Kathy Lisby, but in their individual capacities, which I don't think would qualify for the ex parte Young type treatment.
No, that's what is required for. Look, if you sue the official in his official capacity, that's a suit against the state. That's barred by, you know, sovereign immunity. But if you sue them as individuals, saying they're violating your constitutional rights and you're seeking injunctive relief, that's ex parte Young.
I'm not certain about that, Your Honor. My understanding is a little bit different, which is that, in fact, if you name the individual official as opposed to the state, that the ex parte Young fiction, so to speak, is that official named as the state actor was acting ultra vires, but it doesn't mean that you sue them in their personal capacities. Regardless.
Precisely, because he's acting ultra vires, he is not the state, he's violating the law, and you sue him in his individual. Because, as I say, when you say you're suing an official in his official capacity, that is deemed a suit against his employer, the state agency. But apparently, this hasn't been mentioned in it.
No, this hasn't come up, and we haven't seen any argument for injunctive relief. There probably would be, among other things, a Los Angeles versus Lyons problem. Is this sort of thing a policy? Is it going
but
to happen
But is it
again?
True that the district judge dismissed the whole thing?
With the exception of the state tort claims, which were then eventually.
No, I understand,
remanded.
But he dismissed
otherwise, right, yes. Right. So and there might be a problem.
It's just not an issue. Okay.
Right, and there might be a problem with appellate jurisdiction, too, if there were further claims. And I think it is important on the front end to think about the Fourth Amendment issue, whether this is a search. And there is precedent from this court in criminal investigation context saying that questions are not searches or seizures. And that should follow really as a matter of intuition just from what we understand about what happens in criminal cases. Lawyers, police question people aggressively all the time. They may ask probing questions. There are various kinds of well-known constitutional defenses to that sort of thing under the Fifth and Sixth Amendments. But the Fourth Amendment's never been understood as an additional protection. And I think that if we recognized it as a protection against questioning in some circumstances, ultimately that would lead to broad assertions of Fourth Amendment rights that would, in many cases, obviate the need even to look into the Fifth and Sixth Amendments. You would have circumstances where individuals would be able not to have to show that they feared actual incrimination. They would just have a broader right.
Mr. Fisher, you know, you made the claim that psychological examinations are about as minimally intrusive as the search can get. I have to tell you, I find that, well, I'll use the word, I find it astonishing. I would venture to guess that most people would gladly have their cholesterol checked via a blood test or subject themselves to a drug test or even an x-ray rather than tell some complete stranger who would then report to the employer about their innermost thoughts, troubled relationships, sexual dysfunction, history of mental illness. I really think that if we surveyed 100 government employees and asked them if they'd rather have a blood sample taken or subject themselves to an interview with a psychiatrist, I think they'd rather have that blood sample taken.
That may well be, Your Honor, but I don't think that that's really the test about intrusiveness. I think that the question is, how far is the government really going here? And we have well-established authority about physical invasions, about taking objective data, whether it's through x-ray, blood draws, urine samples, et cetera, which is different from asking questions and obtaining answers. And
do you think there are any limits in the department's ability to require psychological assessments for its employees?
Well, there possibly could be under, for example, the ADA. Now, in our brief, we talked about how the ADA requires only job-relatedness and consistent with business necessity, you know, kind of standards for this sort of thing. And that would be one limitation. Certainly Congress could go further if it liked. And I think this court, in other circumstances, maybe the Flynn case, where the correctional officer was required to undergo an examination, there's a suggestion maybe there's a threshold issue there about the 14th Amendment, general privacy protection, which is not an issue in this case. That would be a concern more about the substance of what's being asked as opposed to the procedure, which is being used to try to get at it, which is the issue in this case.
I was very interested in your arguments, because it seems to me that questioning that's done pursuant to a stop or a police investigation is very different from questioning that one would, have in a psychological exam, particularly when the subject is told, answer or lose your job.
I see my time has expired. Your Honor, may I answer?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think part of the difference there is that we're looking in many circumstances to the qualifications of the individual asking the questions, and I don't think that the Fourth Amendment doctrine permits that to be the consideration. We don't worry about dog sniffs more than human sniffs, at least not right now, with the Supreme Court's looking at this, simply because the dog has greater powers. And what if an officer were to ask a probing psychological question in the course of normal questioning? Would that all of a sudden become a search? And will we have to deal with these things question by question or look at the qualifications of the individual? And
it would just but I think what I was trying to get at, too, is a little different, because theoretically, in a legal police examination, the person being questioned may refuse to answer without facing negative consequences. And I think that would make this case quite different.
Well, there may be, but again, I think there may be other doctrines that would handle that. Maybe there's a due process issue with respect to coercion, that sort of thing.
Well, now she took the test and is still employed, isn't she?
I don't think this is in the record, Your Honor, but my understanding is that she's not employed.
Not a situation where if she refused the test and were fired, she might have a claim of some sort.
The allegation in the complaint is only that she was told that her job was conditioned upon submitting to this evaluation.
And she did have the test.
That's right.
Is the test in the record?
I'm not quite certain about that. I wasn't handling the district court matters, but I think what happened is there was a submission of it under seal, so it may be in that regard, but I don't think anything's ever been done with it, as, with respect to the case.
There would be a difference in a lie detector, for instance, if you have to answer the same questions, only you're attached to something that maybe detects whether or not you're being truthful.
I think that's right, Your Honor. I mean, there again, there's a physical attachment almost like the needle stick, and it's measuring objective data about you as opposed to just asking you questions and receiving the answers. It's taking heart rates, whatnot, that sort of thing. So that could be.
I guess the limitation, but there is such a protection, is I guess you don't have to tell everything. I don't know. When you have to take a test, and if you're not looking at perjury here, we're not looking at something where you're not truthful.
Well, that's right.
I don't know what if someone asks about something, you say, I'm not going to tell them that, and you just say something else.
I think that would be well within the control of the individual. If that's all,
the farther it goes, then I suppose that's doesn't get to the Fourth Amendment then. Huh?
But I think it's just something about the nature of questioning in general, regardless of how far it goes, that it's too difficult to distinguish between what kinds of questions become searches and what are not. And just in general, this is something that happens all the time with respect to the police. They ask questions. They are sometimes tough and probing. Sometimes they are manipulative, but they're not searches.
Let me just ask you one question. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a difference between requiring a psychological exam for hiring versus requiring a psychological exam for continued employment?
Well, not with respect to the Fourth Amendment. More generally, certainly we know that the various law enforcement agencies, CIA, FBI, et cetera, or not FBI, I'm sorry, but Indiana State Police, et cetera, do have that as part of the pre-employment screening. Now, you know, in circumstances where it comes up, maybe as a program where you continue to reassess, that seems to me not different from the initial screening, and in other circumstances where it's based on individual incidents, that doesn't strike me as problematic either. So I guess reasoning it through that way, for various reasons, I don't see a big difference.
Even though a job applicant understands the quid pro quo and can opt to seek employment elsewhere rather than subject herself to what she may consider intrusive psychological counseling, whereas here, you know, leaving a job that you've held for 2 years, doesn't that seem to you to be a graver proposition?
No, Your Honor, I don't, because, you know, to the extent that we're willing to entertain the idea that there are these choices involved, the choice exists both before and during employment. And in fact, I think if we were thinking about it in ADA terms, or just general, you know, Title VII terms, the adverse action could come before the employment as well as during. So I'm not sure that, you know, in the usual way we think about these things, that there would be much of a distinction. And I think here that means that they're equally okay to ask those kinds of questions.
Mm. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Fisher. Mr. Betts, your time expired, but we'll give you another minute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Because so look, this injunction business, how could you get an injunction? She took the test. What would you be enjoining?
Enjoining the practice
but
of the state of Indiana.
How can she's taken the test. How can she be benefited by an injunction? You can't get an injunction to benefit other people. You have to have a stake in you have to.
Part of the injunction, Your Honor, is the removal of those innermost.
She's taken it. Oh, you mean removed from
the files. The state of Indiana says it possesses, owns, will not return those innermost thoughts and feelings which go to romantic relationships, mm-hmm. and even as this court has ruled in Jaffe v. Redmond, that it lays bare an entire self, his dreams, his fantasies, his sins, his nature. And indeed, that was the nature of this questioning. This wasn't mere questioning. This was a psychological exam, which is far more extensive than just questioning. It includes
the type of
exam that is put
is
together.
Is it in the record?
It is under seal, Your Honor, but it is possessed, owned by the state of Indiana. They refused to return it and said they paid for it, and they want to keep it in her personnel file for them to show as they see fit. And with absolutely no basis to have that testing done whatsoever as a matter of the pleadings in this case.
Okay, well,
thank you
very much, Mr. Betts and Mr. Fisher.